This is a pretty brief and simple bill. It prohibits any private business, governmental entity, local education agency, or school from adopting or enforcing a rule, a policy, or procedure, or practice which treats individuals with natural immunity from COVID-19 differently than those who have received a vaccination for COVID-19 by simply stating that natural immunity is as good or better as the shot. And Mr. Chairman, I have brought with me two doctors who we have asked your indulgence to allow them to speak, Dr. Ryan Cole and Dr. John Littell, on this bill.
I appreciate the opportunity. I'm Dr. Ryan Cole. I'm here representing science and humanity. I have no conflicts of interest. I have a background training, PhD work in immunology. I'm an MD, Mayo Clinic trained. I've seen 500,000 patients in my career, anatomic clinical pathologist with a background in virology and immunology. Number one, natural immunity from any disease has been recognized for eons, from the time we had the Black Plague and people that had recovered from the plague cleared the bodies because they had immunity from the plague to now. We have never ignored natural immunity from recovering from a disease until this last 2 years for some odd scientific and unexplainable reason. Somebody's had chickenpox, we recognize it. If you go into a hospital and you're going to go to work, they check you for your immunity against measles, rubella, mumps, et cetera, to make sure you're immune. We have never in the history of science or humanity ignored something that God gave us for a lifetime and for eons. We have studies. Brownstoneinstitute.org has 150 studies showing that natural COVID-covered immunity is stronger than a vaccinal immunity. Those are papers by Dr. Paul Alexander. We have studies out of Israel showing a natural COVID-recovered immunity is 13 times stronger than a vaccinal immunity. Studies out of Qatar showing it's about 30 times stronger than a vaccinal immunity. In the CDC, they put out one study, one fake study that was not peer-reviewed, showing that vaccine was greater than COVID recovery, was not peer-reviewed. The CDC was queried by Attorney Aaron Siri asking if any individual who had COVID recovered was shown to transmit virus to anyone else. They could not do it. In addition, a vaccinated individual studies out of Vietnam, out of Wisconsin, out of California show that somebody who has the vaccine doesn't make a special antibody in their eyes, tears, nose, and throat called secretory IgA. Someone who has a vaccine, and this is why we've seen Omicron breakthrough in everybody, because those secretory IgA, those little mops that the vaccinated don't make, the vaccinated carry equal or higher volumes of virus in their sinuses, their tears, their throat, as anybody who has not been vaccinated. So a vaccine does not prevent, these leaky vaccines don't prevent transmission or spread or disease or death in studies from around the world. We know in studies and solid data out of other countries, as we've seen last week, the CDC has withheld data from the United States citizens. In other countries where we have solid data, 96% of children in the UK, as of January, already had COVID. We're putting policies on people that have, you know, gone through the rough course of having this disease, and we need to recognize the plain and simple fact that we're segregating people. We are violating Title VII of the United States Federal Code, and we're treating people separately, under separate but equal. We're violating civil rights of individuals. If you've had COVID, you are recovered. The science shows it. And we're asking people to get a test to maintain employment, even though they've had COVID, when we know that the vaccinated can carry equal volumes of virus. And we're saying they don't need to be tested. We are segregating our society unnecessarily. Okay. And to draw to a conclusion, I saw the wave there. So countless studies. We need to just end the mandates. There's no medical emergency anymore. Natural COVID-recovered immunity is long, durable, long-lasting. SARS-CoV-1, 18 years later, people are still immune. I say that let's not be a segregational society. Let's recognize our God-given natural immunity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Dr. Littell, thank you, sir. And
my colleague, Dr. Urso, is pinch-hitting for Dr. Littell.
Yeah, I'll be able to see if I can get
If you have anything to add, sir?
I'll cover some of the same materials. Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Representatives, for allowing me to speak. I'm the background in lab for about 11 years. I've invented an FDA-approved drug. I've done a lot of drug repurposing. I've been practicing physician for 32 years, and I've seen about 300,000 patients. So I think in general, my points, Ryan raised a lot of them, but from the beginning, from March 2020, natural immunity has been neglected for the first time in history, as you just talked about. Natural immunity has always been superior to vaccinated immunity through all time. And I'll let you know that Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J all went out of their way to eliminate patients with natural immunity from their studies. Why did they do that? I wonder why. Because these patients retain an antigenic fragment of the virus in their system for a long time. We're finding even 15 months later. They're at serious risk for hyperimmune response. They didn't want their studies to be messed up. So they went out of their way to eliminate every single patient in every single study, J&J, Moderna, Pfizer, to make sure that none of these patients were enrolled in a study. I don't think any of you realize that. So we are taking, let's say the children 5 to 11, about 80% have had the virus already. If we mandate the vaccine in this 5 to 11-year-old group, you have 28 million kids in the United States. That would be basically somewhere close to 20 million of these kids plus would actually have already had the virus. They're at high risk for a hyperimmune response. That means they're going to die. Some of them are going to die if you mandate a vaccine. That's what that means. So it's very important to realize that if we go down this direction, all right, where we mandate vaccines and people who have already had it, this is not a civil liberties thing. This is a medical poor decision. This is a major poor decision medically. Forget about the civil liberties. If you allow it to happen, you're allowing children to die. Okay, so he covered a lot of the other things. As you said, there's 700,000 people in the study in Israel, just so you know, that showed that the double vax were 27 times more likely to get reinfected. So it's not, the vaccine, even if we just talk about that, is not stopping infection, it's not stopping transmission. If you look at the studies in England, in Scotland, and in northern countries in Europe where they get real data, that they're actually the triple vaccinated, the most likely to die. So bottom line is that as we go forward, the natural immunity is long, broad, and durable. And I don't know if he mentioned it, but we have SARS-CoV-1 patients who still had immunity 18 years later. Let that sink in. 18 years later, we still had immunity from SARS-CoV-1 to SARS-CoV-2. This is long, broad, durable immunity. So what I want to say in closing is natural immunity should be considered legally to be at least equal to vaccinated immunity, and immunity is likely lifelong. Thank you.
Do we have any comments or questions to our testimony? Chair Lady Smith.
First of all, thank you all for being here. So if I might, Mr. Chairman, ask a couple of questions of these gentlemen.
Yes, ma'am.
Since they are experts. And I'm sorry I didn't mention, get your last name, but your...
Urso, U-R-S-O.
Thank you, Dr. Urso. Would you describe how a patient with hyperimmune response would present themselves so that the committee understands in full what that would look like? Because, again, I think some of the patients that have had the vaccine... In my anecdotal comparing of notes, are actually presenting themselves to have a hyperimmune response.
Doctor,
that's correct. So what you're seeing is very similar, like you have in a peanut allergy. These people are the ones. If you look at the charts from the VAERS database, in the first 2 days, a tremendous number of patients die. These are the hyperimmune responses that are happening, and they're happening relatively quickly, as if you had for the most part, like a peanut allergy. I think that's the best way for most people who don't actually do medicine to understand it. So these hyperimmune responses are because they already have in their system many, many antibodies to many portions of the virus. So when you give them the vaccine, they are prepped and ready to go. And a lot of them are younger patients who would never have died from the virus anyway. And so once these patients get the virus in their body, they already have so many antibodies already prepped and ready to go. And then you take it and you put a vaccine where they're going to put in, basically, the vaccinated are actually producing more spike than people who are actually sick from the disease. These studies have come out in the last month where they're showing the vaccinated are still producing spike protein even 2 months later. We're producing massive amounts, and they've already had the virus. They're going to have a hyperimmune response. That's the key factor in that.
Chair Lady.
Thank you. And a second question. This has probably been the biggest piece of information that's being presented as fact that I think is actually would fall into disinformation, is that if you have a vaccine, does that in any capacity prevent you from carrying, spreading, or transmitting SARS-CoV-1 in any iteration? Because one of the things that is often stated for the purpose of having vaccines is to prevent the spread of COVID.
I'll let Dr. Coley answer. He's covered it already. It's this is clear information.
Dr. Coley.
Yeah, it's absolutely scientifically clear that these vaccines do not prevent acquisition of the disease. SARS-CoV-2 does not prevent transmission of the disease, does not prevent illness from the disease, and does not prevent death from the disease. And in fact, in studies, the all-cause mortality rates have been shown now to be higher in numerous studies in those who have received the vaccine than those who have not. So it does not prevent transmission. Those who have gotten the shots can acquire and transmit at equal volumes. University of Wisconsin, University of California, Vietnam, multiple studies affirming this scientifically peer-reviewed data.
And mechanistically, he's basically talked about it's from IgA. Secretory IgA is the most abundant antibody in our body, and it does not get stimulated from any of these vaccines. This is a respiratory virus. Secretory IgA is in the respiratory system, and that's one of the main reasons why vaccinated people actually harboring more virus.
Chair Lady.
And I'll conclude with this. So is it fair to say that a vaccine does just exactly what it's supposed to do, which is it's to mimic the natural immunity, the natural exposure of a person's humanity to a pathogen? If you were exposed to a pathogen or a virus naturally, you have an immune response, and what the vaccine does is it mimics that exposure to pre-expose you so that your future exposures will have a memory and that you will have the ability to respond appropriately rather than preventing you from having any symptom, preventing you from transmitting anything, or preventing you from having any illness in the future.
You are correct, and that's why these have failed as vaccines. Once Delta came along, they were essentially 0% effective, and Omicron, they've actually been negatively effective in the sense that if you've had two or three of the shots, you actually have a higher chance of acquiring Omicron. And so, yes, a vaccine is supposed to mimic a natural infection and is supposed to give you immunity to a disease going forward once you're exposed to it. You're absolutely correct.
And more importantly, this virus has 29 proteins. The spike protein is one protein. So you're basically, when you get a natural infection, you're going to get antibodies to the nucleocapsid and other proteins besides the spike protein. It's much more durable for that reason. You also get massive T-cell responses. So it's not going to even be close between the vaccine and the virus.
Chair Lady.
And I'll conclude with a statement. Thank you, gentlemen. But I think that the public can see that this virus has been politicized and that we have abandoned much of our traditional approach to medicine. And public health has failed us because we've allowed politics to get involved. And I just thank you all, but I also challenge you to let's work together to restore hope and trust in public health, because now Americans don't trust health care as they should have to begin with. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman Byrd, you're recognized.
Yeah, just one question. Did you say that if you had COVID and then had both shots and a booster shot, you'd be more likely to get it again? Or,
gentlemen,
you have an increase. If you look at the Denmark data, if you look at the UK data, in their cohorts, they showed an increased acquisition in those groups of virus, especially Omicron. It increased your chances of acquiring Omicron. Now, Omicron is acting as a natural vaccine and a blessing to humanity because it's much milder. It's a kitty cat compared to the tigers of the earlier variants, so it's a blessing to humanity. So as the emergency is fading and Omicron has spread through like a wildfire, we're lucky in that regard. However, in Israel, if you look at New Zealand right now, that's almost completely received the jab, they have one of the highest climbing rates, and that's within double and triple vaccinated individuals acquiring virus at a much higher rate than if one had not gotten the shots, correct?
I'll clarify one point about that also. What we were specifically referring to is the naturally immune are much less likely, 27 to 30 times less likely to get the virus than the people who are triple vaccinated. So the naturally immune have very little chance of getting the virus again, whereas the triple vaccinated are 27 to 30 times higher likelihood of having the virus. That's the specific thing that we referenced.
So what about the one that's naturally immune and then has triple vaccinated?
That's a great question.
Gentlemen, be recognized.
Yeah, this is a great question. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you get the shots before you get COVID, you actually narrow your immune response. So when you get the shot, you're making a strong reaction to one narrow part of the virus, that spike, and not all those 28 other proteins. We found in week 42 data out of the United Kingdom, if you got the shots before you got COVID, you narrowed your body's ability to mount an immune response to this little protein that covers the RNA. So this is another concerning thing as we've gone forward with an experimental shot on humanity, not knowing what the long-term effects could be. Many people, we narrowed their immune response and their ability. It's something called original antigenic sin. We've made the body commit a sin to recognize a part of the virus but become blind to other parts of the virus. So this is, again, experimental science, you know, that we've done. These aren't approved. These are emergency authorized. An approved vaccine is not available in the United States of America. And so this is very important. We are doing something we've never done before on massive numbers of people, not knowing what the long-term immunologic outcomes are going to be, and we have seen some very concerning signals thus far. Thank you.
Chairman?
So if you had the COVID before the shots, does that make it better?
It would appear to, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, it does appear to make it better if you got COVID before the shots. Now, the CDC came out and said, well, if you got the shot, or if you got COVID and then got a shot, you get super immunity, which is about as real as Superman. It doesn't exist.
Okay. Yeah.
So once you've had the disease, if you get a shot after having the disease, your risk of adverse reactions are 2 to 4 times higher. Studies by Dr. Rao, Dr. Kammerer, Dr. Mathudius show that if you get the shot after having had the disease, these adverse outcomes, the myocarditis, the neural inflammation, the awakening of other diseases, the autoimmune diseases, the rheumatoid arthritis, etc., you are at a much higher risk of acquiring those adverse reactions if you choose to get a shot after trying to do better than God's natural immune system already gave you from having the disease.
Chairman? Can I tag on to that a little bit?
Yes, yeah. You're right.
I just wish you'd been here before.
So the other concerning factors are it's the shot is blocking P53, which is the guardian of the genome, which means every time DNA damage occurs, DNA damage repair does not occur. So you're going to see an uptick in cancers. You're going to see problems with toll-like receptors, which is viral surveillance system. So you're going to have a problem with increased Epstein-Barr virus, increased herpes simplex, or more shingles. This is already happening. So we're seeing a lot of issues. We're seeing that the vaccine cannot be broken down very easily. We're still having production of spike, which I just mentioned 2 months later. So there's a lot of concerns on that side, but there's very little concerns on the side of natural immunity. It's very safe and very long-lasting and very broad and very durable, and that's basically the main thing. But we have our own feelings about the shots, as you already said, but it's data-driven. It's not our feelings. It's our data.
Our code says when we're mandating a vaccine, it has to be necessary for the health and safety of others. And if I'm hearing you correctly, what you're saying is that it's not necessary for the health and safety of others. Is that correct?
Gentlemen.
Yeah. So
thank you,
Mr. You want to answer that or now? Okay. So it's not necessary for the health of others because, as you said, even the vaccine itself is not preventing transmission or infection. But more importantly, as you heard, 57,000 patients in the Cleveland Clinic study, zero reinfections. The FOIA request, as he just pointed out, zero reinfections of people who had documented COVID and then another case of COVID. So we're seeing that we're talking about this bill specifically, the already infected, the already recovered, it's absolutely unnecessary and actually harmful. You're harming, that was the point I was getting out before, you're harming them by retaining that antigenic fragment. they have a high risk for hyperimmune response, and it's happening. This is the most dangerous vaccine rollout in our history. The platform for messenger RNA platform, of course, was developed in the 1980s, but the lipid nanoparticle platform has been used for other purposes. And I was done oncology, and we were using it to create chemotherapy carrier to the brain and to the eye. And what we found was that lipid nanoparticles are like garlic. They go everywhere. So the problem you have is, I tell patients, you need a door open to let a virus in, but you need a door crack to let a lipid nanoparticle in. This is the problem from the technology platform. From the beginning, it was going to go, it wasn't going to ever stay in the arm, and that's been proven by multiple studies. So what you have is, since you asked the question, I'm against the technology platform of messenger RNA vaccine because it's carried in a lipid nanoparticle that you cannot control. It's going to go into the ovaries, it's going to go in the adrenal glands, it's going to go into the spleen, it's going to go into the brain, it's going to go into all those tissues. And the heart has fairly tight junctions. It's going to get outside the wall of the heart because it can slip through door cracks. So that's the problem with the technology platform. This spike protein is the most toxic component of the 29 proteins. It does 95% of the disease. So what you're looking at is you have a lipid nanoparticle that's going to take the most toxic part of this virus to every part of your body. That is a problem to me. Yes, sir.
Dr. Kumar.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, gentlemen, for... I was just in a very simple way from some of your words, I was concerned that what you're saying is that COVID vaccination is not effective.
Gentlemen,
you want to try that?
Mr. Chair, correct, especially against Omicron, it's negatively effective. At Delta, it was at about zero. Maybe early on, it prevented some severity and hospitalization with the early variants. But that benefit went away after a few months and has long since been gone since Delta hit. And so we can say with scientific certainty as we look at the data around the world that that's the point now. These shots have not been modified since they came out. So it's the original variant that went extinct a year ago. So now we're mandating shots still around the country for a shot that doesn't work for a virus that's here now. So we have an extinct virus and we're telling people they need to get a shot for it. And that doesn't make any scientific sense whatsoever. It's like saying, hey, I want you to be immune against diphtheria, but I'm going to give you a flu shot from 5 years ago. It doesn't make any sense scientifically at this point. So it may have helped early on with some hospitalizations to a small degree and some severity to a small degree. But that was before this variant went extinct, and we haven't modified the shot since.
Thank you, sir.
Can I say something on that, too?
Yes, sir. You're recognized.
So I think the totality of the vaccine has been that early it was showing some effectiveness. But when we look at the totality, we're seeing 40% more deaths in 2021. So we have to look, what is happening? Why are these people having strokes, heart attacks, and higher risks for cancer? Why are we seeing so much viral immune Bell's palsy and shingles? Why are we seeing all that? We have to try to put that together. So I think that there would be very easy for me to say we should be cautiously moving forward with this vaccine. If you look at the data from England, where we're getting true data, and everyone knows that the CDC stopped tracking data in May of 2021. Why did they do that? I have no idea. I do know they didn't do that in England, and you can see quite I have the charts for anybody who wants to see them. The triple vaccinated are dying at high rates in England, period.
Can you, in one or two words, tell us what does that mean? Hyperimmune response is when somebody already has had COVID and they get vaccination, so their immunity is overstimulated. But to a patient coming to the clinic, to you, what does that look like? Can you do that kind of very briefly?
You're certainly recognized.
It looks like death.
Yeah.
That's the simplest answer. It looks like death. If you look at the charts, the VAERS database, you see this mass spike in deaths in the first 2 days. So for simplicity, it looks like death.
Well,
and the non-death would look like 1,000% increase to the clinic of neurologic conditions, which we see in the Department of Defense military epidemiology database. It would look like an increase in autoimmune diseases. It would look like an increase in bowel disease and bowel discomfort. It would look like an increase in joint pain. It would look like an increase in fatigue. It would look like an increase in inability to daily function. I mean, there are 44,000 people permanently disabled from these shots in the United States thus far. It would look like multiple moderate to severe illnesses that the patient never had previously appearing to their doctor after the first or the second or the third shot.
Dr. Kumar, can you explain
the 24,000 deaths in the VAERS database? You know, it is what it is. It's the most deadly vaccine in history. So we don't, it's just data. Like, if you're talking data, that's the data.
I just want to circle it back to the point at hand. Natural immunity is long, durable, and a good thing, and we're grateful we could get to that point in our society. And so I think that's really the point of this, is there are a lot of weeds we could get into, but at the end of the day, I think recognizing what science and our God-given natural immune system, I think, is the key point here. So thank you, and thank you, Dr. Kumar. Appreciate your comments.
Speaker Marsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm not a health expert like Dr. Kumar is, but can we get rid of the vaccine? Does it rid itself of our body so we get back to normal? Is it in there forever?
Gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I get this quite often. The short answer is, and this is the good news, the majority of people don't have these adverse side effects. Now, are we seeing them at a high degree compared to what we have historically with any other medical therapy or shot? Yes, we are. Our body, once we get that shot, has made that memory to that spike and that antibody. Now, that can fade if we're never exposed to another coronavirus, no problem. If we're exposed to another one, it can cause some enhanced disease. So the hope is that we're all fine. The reality is, statistically, we're seeing some signals that there are some increased adverse outcomes in those who have received multiple shots. Time will tell. I wish we could advance that clock and know. Can we get rid of it? No. We have memory now to it. Can we optimize our immune health, optimize our sleep, optimize our vitamin D, optimize our diet? Things that will optimize and not have a hyperimmune reaction. Yes, we can do those kind of things. I tell people the most important thing you can do is have a normal vitamin D level, like a conductor of a symphony that brings in the sections of your immune system at the right times and fades them out as they need to. But if your vitamin D level is low, then your immune system is like a mosh pit at a punk rock concert. So you basically want to optimize your health, not to have these hyperimmune reactions that Dr. Kumar was bringing up. And so that's the important thing. If we focus on health and wellness, generally, you know, we can hope for the best in terms of those long-term reactions.
Speaker Marsh.
Thank you. Have one other follow-up. If what you all are saying is true, and I don't doubt that, why are we not saying that out of Washington and Dr. Fauci? Why are they not coming out and saying some of this stuff? I haven't heard any of that.
Gentlemen.
Yeah, I can talk of that. Part of the issue dealing with Washington is I've been going there since probably June 2020. The political people are running a lot of the agencies, and their agencies are actually getting much of their funding from Big Pharma for the most part. So I think there's some influences there that make it hard to get those messages out. There's a Cancer Connect is a place where you can get information online. If they put out information that vitamin D helps to prevent cancers, they've been the person who runs that has told me that basically they have to eliminate that information. The drug companies don't want that out there. So I think there's influences politically from Big Pharma and a lot of that messaging. I always asked why couldn't you put somebody else in Fauci's place, and I got looked out like something was growing out of my head. So it's very interesting as you go forward. And the point you asked about earlier about whether you can get rid of these vaccines from your system, it's basically like a dose response. The more you get, the more it accumulates in your body. And we are seeing some in experimental models reverse transcription, which is very worrisome. This is the latest one just came out about a week ago showing that it goes into liver cells and it reverse transcribes and becomes a permanent part of your genome. So it just happens so quickly. This is not unusual for messenger RNA to do this. It's 7% of our genome or so is actually reverse transcribed viral DNA. So this is not something that might happen. It already has happened to the human condition over the last millennia. So these are not things that are, I tell people, these are like a nuclear, it's like nuclear energy. You can make a bomb or you can make electricity. So this is a very dangerous platform, And I think we've gone too quickly. And I'm not anti-vax. I have six kids. I've had like 300 vaccines. So I've never spoken out about vaccines before. This is a platform. It's a gene therapy platform. Has tremendous promise, but it also has limitations.
Speaker Marsh. Yes, sir. Further comments or questions of our testimony? If none, gentlemen, we appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And we will dismiss you. Go back into session. No objections. And we're back on the bill. No amendment. Question has been called. We have opposition to the question on the bill.
Could I just say one thing, Chairman?
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir.
We got just a moment here.
I appreciate so much the time and commitment and these folks who showed up here because of the importance of this. And I'd just like to make one statement before you vote. I think it's extremely arrogant for Emperor Fauci to believe that all his minions can develop out of a lab an immunization that is better than the creator of this universe that created an immunization in every living human being that caused David to say, I am fearfully and wonderfully made.
We move on to the question has been called. No objections. We'll be voting to send this to full committee. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposition? So approved.